Let's go ahead and return to Leviticus chapter 22, beginning in verse number 15 here in a moment. Remember that the book of Leviticus is a rule book for the Levites. It's to help them know the proper way to do the procedures that are part of their job of representing God to the people and people to God and supporting that. So we've got the priests that are part of the Levitical tribe, their very special component, and there's special rules that apply to them. And then we've got all the other Levitical members that are supporting that priesthood, and they're supposed to know their rules, all the ins and outs. There are also things that relate to the rest of the Israelis that the Levitical tribe is supposed to be expert on to help the rest of the Israelis know the proper procedures for themselves. And we'll see those things from time to time. But right now we're kind of zooming in on things dealing with the priestly families in particular to make sure that they understand they have a special status as those that offer the sacrifices, and so special rules apply to them. The most recent ones that we were looking at is who gets to eat the food that is given out of the sacrificial procedures to the priests as their daily food, because the officiating priests get certain pieces, the family members of the priests get certain bits and pieces, and then we have to know, well, what about visitors at the table of the priests and their families? Do they get to eat of this? And the answer is no, unless they are a priest or of a priestly family, they don't get to eat of the sacrificial items. But if they've become an official member of the family, yes, they do. Now, verse number 15, where we pick it up today, we have the possibility of a mistake that could happen in the sacrifice process. Now, remember that not all sacrifices were completely burned up. There was a whole big bunch of sacrifices that involved giving a small representative portion of fat and sometimes meat and some grain things to burn up to God. And then the rest of that animal would be cut up and cooked and eaten by the priests and the Levites and the worshipers who would be non-Levites. And everybody was supposed to know which portions were to be eaten by which people. Well, mistakes do happen. We know that. So here's what would be done if a mistake slipped through the procedures. Verse 14. But if a man eats a holy gift unintentionally, then he shall add to it a fifth of it and shall give the holy gift to the priests. And we've seen this percentage on several occasions when an accident happens or when inappropriate taking of somebody else's private property happens. That is, once the mistake or the inappropriate behavior is discovered, then the person pays back what was taken, plus a 20% penalty, as we would say, over and above that. And so that's what happens here. If the offerer finds out, oh my goodness, I ate some of the priest's portion of the sacrifice, the moment they find out it, they pay to the priest the equivalent thing that they ate, plus 20% more. Now, that's a little harder for us to imagine since we're not talking about money here. We're talking about a piece of meat, a piece of steak or rump roast, something of that nature. So they would know how to do that, and the Levites would help people to do that appropriately. Verse number 15, they shall not profane the holy gifts of the sons of Israel, which they offer to he who is, and so cause them to bear punishment for guilt by eating their holy gifts, for I am he who is, who sanctifies them. So the ultimate thing is just be more careful in the procedures so that these accidents don't happen. Because the whole idea is the priest is representing the people to God and God to the people. And because of that, they are paid out of the sacrificial meat and breads that are offered. Verse 17 of chapter 22. Then he who is spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and to his sons and to all the sons of Israel, and say to them, any man of the house of Israel or of the aliens in Israel," so these would be the non-ethnic Israelis that are kind of associating themselves with the faith of the Israelis. So we would call them either proselytes in full, that is, they've kind of converted to Judaism, or those that are proselytes in process, the proselytes at the gate. They're kind of working on this idea of becoming Jewish. So ethnic Israeli or Israeli in heart, okay? They come to offer these sacrifices under the Mosaic law. Whether it is any of their votive, that's relating to a vow, or any of their free will offerings, that's something that's not required to be given, but which you want to give, which they present to he who is for a burnt offering, for you to be accepted. So here's the standard that is being given to the Levites and being passed on to all the Israelis. If you want your sacrifice under this system to be accepted by God, this is the standard, and we've seen some of these already in the book of Leviticus. It must be a male without defect from the cattle, the sheep, or the goats. So that's the three animal categories that worship sacrifices are offered from. No chickens, only cattle, sheep, and goats, and then also the category of birds, clean birds that are mentioned in other places. Verse 20, whatever has a defect, you shall not offer, for it will not be accepted for you. And we've talked about this defect issue before. The animal must be physically intact and looking normal, or it will not be an acceptable sacrifice. Verse 21, when a man offers a sacrifice or piece of peace offering to he who is to fulfill a special vow or for a free will offering of the herd or of the flock, it must be perfect to be accepted. There will be no defect in it. And then we get into the specifics. We saw these yesterday when we were talking about those who offer the sacrifices having to be of the same standard as the animals. That is, the priests have to be perfect in their body. So here are the standards. Verse 22, those that are blind or fractured, so it's got a broken leg, or maimed, it's got a crippled leg because of a fracture in the past, or having a running sore, so it's got a wound that's either actively bleeding or it's got pus coming out of it, or eczema, so it's got a skin problem, or scabs, so this would be either some sort of skin problem that's in the process of being healed, or maybe even a wound that was bad enough that it's scabbed over. If that's there, nope, it's not sacrificial grade. You shall not offer to he who is, nor make of them an offering by fire on the altar of he who is. Now, this stuff comes into play in the book of Malachi at the tail end of our Bible, our Old Testament Bible, because God was ticked off at the Israelis of that time period that were trying to fob off to him animals that were already on their way out. They were mostly or half dead, or they had a problem that made them not good enough to sell to somebody else, or something that you really didn't want to keep around and breed. So they were offering these sick, diseased, screwed up, deformed animals to God. And God was going, would you do that to your human king? Would you do that to a human leader? Why are you trying to do it to me? And so he was insulted in Malachi because they weren't even looking at these standards that had been in place from the very beginning of the Israeli nation. Let's look at some more of the things that would disqualify an animal from being a sacrificial grade. Verse number 23. In respect to an ox or a lamb which has an overgrown or stunted member. Now, these are basically things that are out of proportion or something not right in them. I'm interested in the idea that in the Greek text, I believe it's here, that they use the same terminology that we saw earlier about the priests, about having a split nose or something wrong with the ear. So I think that the 3rd century BC experts in the scripture were trying to put across this idea that we're talking about something that physically is obviously wrong with the animal. So in respect to that, you may present it for a free will offering. So if it's got something like maybe something wrong with its nose, or it's got something wrong with its ear, maybe it got caught in a fence or got bit by another one of the animals. I don't know. You come up with some reason as to why it's got something wrong physically with its body. You could give it as a voluntary offering as long as there's nothing else wrong with it, but you can't use it for a vow where you're making promises to God. That's not appropriate. Verse number 24. Also, anything with its testicles bruised or crushed or torn or cut. So if you've castrated the animal, this would apply here. Or if it was genetically defective and the testicles didn't descend shortly after its birth, then you shall not offer to he who is or sacrifice it in your land. So that's not acceptable. Nor shall you accept any such from the hand of a foreigner for an offering as the food of your God, for their corruption is in them. They have a defect. They shall not be accepted for you. So even if you've got another nation that wants to show honor to God, which we have examples of that in the Old Testament and even in the New Testament, where other ethnic groups want to send sacrificial animals to be offered to God, you've still got to apply the standard to it. That's what the Levites are being told. It has to be of this perfect standard. Verse 26, then he who is spoke to Moses, saying, when an ox or a sheep or a goat is born, it shall remain 7 days with its mother, and from the 8th day on, it shall be accepted as a sacrifice of an offering by fire to he who is. Whether it is an ox or a sheep, you shall not kill both it and its young in 1 day. So this is getting to that idea related to circumcision. You remember that all males born into the families of Israel, those baby boys had to go until their 8th day, and then they were circumcised and given their name. Well, the same thing is applied now to the animals in Israel. They cannot be accepted as sacrifices until they've reached the 8th day of their life. Then, and only then, can they be sacrificed. And as a kindness component, I think that's what it is here, you don't kill both the baby and the mama on the same day. That's not fair. It's not appropriate. I think this is kind of related to that rule that we've talked about a couple of times now. You shall not boil a kid in its mother's milk. It's just not right. There's something just unfair about that. It's cold-hearted. So same thing here. If you're going to sacrifice the baby on the eighth day of its life, don't be killing mom off at the same time. Verse number 29. When you sacrifice a sacrifice of thanksgiving to He who is, you shall sacrifice it so that you may be accepted. It shall be eaten on the same day. You shall leave none of it until morning. I am He who is. And so we've seen this before, that dealing with sacrificial meals, particularly in this case specified the Thanksgiving offering, it's to be treated like you treat the Passover. You butcher the animal out, you offer the appropriate portions through the priests on the altar, and then you eat the rest of it that day. You don't keep leftovers. It's a one-time deal because it's special. And so these are all the principles, these are all the standards that God is giving to the Levitical tribe through Moses and Aaron. Verse 31, so you shall keep my commandments and do them. I am He who is. You shall not profane my holy name, but I will be sanctified among the sons of Israel. I am He who is, who sanctifies you, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am He who is. And what really is coming across by all of this is when God gives these Israelis a standard, they are expected to follow that standard because of who is giving it to them. When God is your boss, you do what the boss says because He is who He is. And so this is a training time for the Israelis as a people. This is a basic training time for them, that no matter what God tells you to do, you follow through with it. You don't fudge the details. Leviticus 23. He who is spoke again to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, He who is appointed times, which you shall proclaim as holy convocations, my appointed times are these. So God wants to go through and talk about the special holidays, holy days, on which the Israelis are supposed to have a day off. Remember, they went for generations in Egypt without a day off, without any holidays. And so now God is giving them very specific days that they, as a culture, are to uphold and protect and enforce. And we've talked about how the principle can come into our time period as everybody needs to take time off from their normal work. They need to take a day off every week, and they also need to take special days away to spend it with their family and friends and in worship of God. And so that's a principle that is being taught by these passages here. So let's talk about what were considered the days off on the Israeli calendar in this special presentation by God. Verse number 3, for 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh day there is a Sabbath of complete rest, a holy convocation. Now this idea of a convocation is, it includes this gathering. So not only did the Israelis have the day to kick back from their normal work week, the Sabbath day was also supposed to be used to get together with others, others in your family, others among your neighbors, and consider who God is and what He's done for you. Now, when the Christian era came along, and after the time of Constantine, the day that was selected was the Lord's Day, the first day of the week, because there was not a connection in with the Jewishness. It was a connection in with the resurrection of Jesus taking place on the first day of the week. So up until early in my life, it was very common practice in communities, that is, countries that had a Christian background, to never have anything open on Sunday. Because Sunday was set aside for a rest day and a day of be spending with your family and friends and a day of gathering with other believers. And so that's kind of what's coming out in this phrasing here, this wording here of a holy convocation. You shall not do any work. It is a Sabbath to he who is in all your dwellings. So they were not even supposed to be cooking on this day. They cooked the day before and ate cold meals. All right. Verse 4. These are the appointed times of he who is holy convocation. So that's that gathering together again, which you shall proclaim at the times appointed for them. So these are special other gathering times for the Israelis. Verse 5. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at twilight, is he who is his Passover. So every year on the anniversary of the first Passover meal, the Israelis would butcher out their Passover lambs and prepare for eating it once the sun went down. Verse 6. Then on the 15th day of the same month, there is the feast of unleavened bread to he who is. For 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall not do any laborious work. For 7 days you shall present an offering by fire to he who is. On the seventh day is a holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work. So the Feast of Unleavened Bread was from the 15th to the 21st of the first month of the Jewish year. Always falls during the spring. It's always connected to the full moon that follows or is somehow associated with the spring equinox. So the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, that'd be the 15th, was a day off and a special gathering for worship and celebration. And then on the 21st, you would also have another day off, as it is in Israeli, and you would spend it with your family and your friends, and you'd also have a time when you would get together have an assembly for worship and celebration and thanksgiving. So that was happening every single year. That was actually a mandatory thing that all the adult men who were of cleanliness, that is, they were ceremonially clean, were supposed to gather at the tabernacle or later the temple every year for the Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread. Verse number 9. Then he who is spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you enter land which I am going to give you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring in the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. He shall wave the sheaf before he who is for you to be accepted. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. Now on the day when you wave the sheaf, you shall offer a male lamb 1 year old without defect for a burnt offering to he who is. Its grain offering shall be 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil, and an offering by fire to he who is for a soothing aroma, with its drink offering, 1/4 of a hin of wine. Until this same day, until you've brought in the offering of your God, you shall eat neither bread nor roasted grain nor new growth. It is to be a perpetual statute throughout your generations in all your dwelling places. Now, we're still talking about the Feast of Unleavened Bread in this context. So on the first day of the week that falls during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, that is from the 15th to the 21st, there's always going to be a first day of the week that falls during that frame. So on the first day of the week, during Passover, during unleavened bread, the priest is supposed to go out into the ripening grain field. And at this time of year, that would be barley that is ripened. And they were supposed to cut a representative sheaf out of that grain field, bring it before the Lord's presence at the tabernacle, wave it ceremonially, and then offer a sacrifice made from that grain. It was a big loaf of bread that was the same size as the bread that was on the table of presence. It would be offered with oil mixed in and the drink offering, and this would be what was called the first fruits offering. And until that day, none of the barley harvest was supposed to be used. And this would be the day on which, from here on out, the barley harvest can start. Now, in the year that Jesus became the atoning sacrifice for sin, he was crucified on a Friday. He was crucified on the preparation day, which means the preparation for the Sabbath day. So that was the 14th. The 15th happened to be a Sabbath day. The 15th was a Sabbath day. So Jesus was in the grave on that day. The first day of the week was the 16th in that year. And on that day, Jesus became the first fruits of those raised from the dead permanently. And we see that mentioned in the New Testament. So Jesus fulfills this idea of the beginning of the harvest of souls into their permanent bodies. And so we've got this connection between the actual calendar days. Jesus died as the Passover lamb on Passover, and he was resurrected as the first fruits on the day of first fruits. And then we can start the harvest of souls 50 days later, because we'll start talking about that in tomorrow's context.